Chapter 2. Another dull day with these giggling girls, sewing and giggling, sewing and giggling. 'Tis all they do, Elizabeth thought. But I guess I should feel fortunate. I'm warm, safe, and in comfort. But 'tis boring, boring, boring. If only I could see the Padre's books again. Or even better, Simon's collection of black volumes. I wonder where they are kept. Simon, the palace seer, stargazer, writer of visions, and reader of horoscopes, held King Henry's ear, enjoying the power of a favorite. Moving silent through the castle on slippered feet, he haunted the halls like a ghost, a spirit divided, for he was often seen at different places at the same time, lurking in shadows, cowled in a black robe. Wide-eyed witnesses, swearing over the cross, still doubters of his sorcery. He smiled, enjoying their fear, fostering his spirit power at every opportunity, heavy-browed with black eyes buried deep in his skull. He was an unknown race, but trusted by the king. His foretelling trances as he stood, arms wide, staring at the heavens, always bore true. The king's decrees were always measured against Simon's second sight. His treatment to all was as ice, and Elizabeth wondered why he treated the women of the court with such disdain, as nothing, and wondered about his male desires. Greeting all with a vile look or a sardonic grin, she thought the worst. All were afraid to dare gossip, sensing his dark heart and finder of secrets. Elizabeth, just 13 when she arrived at court, was tall, thin, and gangly. Her quiet personality gave the appearance of being aloof and unfriendly, which did not help trying to fit with the other young ladies at court. So, she usually was charged to the governess to assist with the king's daughters, Princess Mary and Princess Elizabeth. Enjoying that time, she formed a special bond with young Elizabeth. Perhaps, she thought, because the young princess was marked a bastard and shunned like her. The child's mother, Queen Anne, was beheaded for treason. But also, she supposed, they shared the same hair color and same name. But truth be, she would rather not be at court. Her Irish father, commanding the king's Red Army, recently lost his life in a heroic battle defending the crown. When the king honored his service, he offered a boon to her mother. Fortunately, in the presence of the palace court, and her mother dared to plead her favor to place Elizabeth in his service. It was a brazen act, blushing him to anger, but he could not refuse without losing face. An Irish girl at court was unheard of, and his approval would sure cause a stir throughout the palace. But king he was, and so it would be. He would correct the matter later. So here she lived with 11 other young women close in age, all English except her, all Protestant except her, all wealthy except her, titled Ladies in Waiting. Outwardly, the others acted cordial and civil, but Elizabeth was friendless, believing the Irish a lower class and excluding her from their inner circle of gossip and games. So she kept mostly to herself, busying her mind with music and poetry, much to the consternation of the queen, who recognized her future beauty and quick mind. Observing how the other young women treated her, she realized Elizabeth would have to win her own battles. The palace circle, forever cruel, was the test, but she sensed Elizabeth possessed the inner strength to best them all. It would be an interesting tug. Enjoying time alone, she loved exploring the palace castle. Wandering around the maze of corridors, she became lost several times among the countless residences and reception rooms, not counting the walled village. She enjoyed strolls around the great keep with its rich furnishings of tapestries, surrounded by thick gilded moldings. One wall held a coned fireplace, higher than her, with a black stoned hearth highlighting a white marble mantel, carved with hunting scenes. Beneath lofty vaulted ceilings, a dais at the opposite end served the king and queen's throne, draped in a backdrop of purple velvet with the royal coat of arms, embroidered gold, high center. Then there was the dining hall, and of course her favorite, the library. Each hollow corridor, guarded by stiff sentries, served the captain of the guard and who, for coin, secretly served the interests of Simon. At dark, black tarred torches, angled off wrought wall brackets, speckled the hall with eerie light. Elizabeth imagined the hollow suits of armor seemed like steel ghosts. On gloomy days, they appeared to spirit talk as drafts whistled through their armor. Stationed still, the cold made the metal creak and squeak. If one stared close, you could actually see them move, making her shiver, thinking they might come alive. But usually, the palace was busy with servants and pages everywhere, racing about, seemingly in a contest of sorts with stewards keeping order. After mastering the palace, she explored the outer baileys, encased by proud turreted walls encircling many different village areas. Each served its purpose, as Elizabeth's nose wrinkled with mixed smells of manure and animals of various types. Tart metal, sizzling from flaming forges, glowed before dunking, then hissed, protesting the temper as it singed the air. Fortunately, fresh fruits and vegetables balanced the aromas, along with fresh bread from huge brick ovens, domed to even the heat. Tinkers and beggars were few, but she watched with wary eyes. No trust there. Although most lanes were cobbled, she had to tiptoe often, holding skirts kitty high to avoid the slop and puddle traps. Creaking wagons, both hand and horse, mixed with hollers and curses, crowded the lanes, setting a busy mood under awnings and signs, declaring wares of this and that. She liked it here. The gatehouse sported not one but two portcullises. The massive grills, metal sheathed, with the first line of defense if an attacker breached the moat and drawbridge. It seemed an impossible feat to Elizabeth, as she viewed the hundreds of arrow loops shaped like Christ crosses, covering every angle from the towering pillared walls. These, plus the wall walk with protective horning, allowed defenders to rain boiling oil and heavy stones on the enemy below. She felt very safe. Today's sojourn brought her to the base of the outer wall, looking straight up to the bastions. Her neck ached, spotting the watch turrets with their craggy crenels like giant's teeth, reaching to the clouds. Excited, she climbed the endless circular stone stairs, finally reaching the ramparts with legs wobbly and puffing for breath. Once there, though, she leaned, her waist against a crenel, and gazed out to forever. Here, with the whistling wind, she fancied the most. Pulling her cloak tighter, hugging herself, she looked out at the world as far as she could see, imagining adventures bawdy and brave. Today was extra fair, with clouds coasting below. The cleared land circling the castle was shaded black-brown to gold in organized squares of wheat and readied earth. Villagers and animals, tiny as ants, moved slowly about, keeping a safe distance from the heavy woods. The forest, from this high, with gusting breezes, caused treetop waves casting every hue like an emerald sea. She smiled, remembering ghost and goblin tales in the haunted Sherwood Forest. Fables around the evening fire caused the wide-eyed young ladies to squeal and sign the cross, believing sure the cost would surely be your soul if caught there after dark. She wondered if wee people haunted the forests in England with their mischief as they did in Ireland. Every forest had fairies, but wee people? She wasn't sure. With a dreaming sigh, her eyes lifted and looked out to the end of things and the forever sea of Kendal Green. But Elizabeth held a secret. Her purpled eyes burned dark with anger at the way her sisters treated her, and she took satisfaction in knowing she could read and write. She also studied numbers and could draw with some talent. She kept these skills secret. Being warned by her mother, it was unseemly for ladies to involve themselves much in men's affairs. Elizabeth remembered her mother was distressed, discovering the house servant Alio tutoring her in secret. Alio, a freed Greek slave abandoned in Ireland years ago, was schooled in the arts, mathematics, languages, and traveled the known world and its seas. When her father rescued him, Alio pleaded to be taken in his service. Elizabeth thought him to be the oldest man in the world. At first glance, his stooped shoulders and leather skin, thick, wrinkled, gave him a frightening look. But after spinning his tails and looking into his wise, soft eyes, she felt safe and comfortable. He nicknamed her Becky when alone, and instructed her in Latin, French, Spanish, and Greek. She learned her numbers, but liked geography the best, understanding how different lands fit together, circling the oceans, stirred her spirit, especially when connected to his storied adventures. In addition, he taught her poetry, philosophy, and different religions, with some sounding sacrilegious and forbidden, making it more exciting. Elizabeth quickly figured the routine of the castle and devised a plan to smuggle books from the king's library. She smiled, cocky, thinking how simple it was, as she carried a fresh bouquet and boldly approached the guard protecting the hallway, telling him she was instructed to display them on the center table in the library. Suspicious at first, he allowed her to pass. Once inside, it was just a matter of placing the flowers on the table, grabbing a book, and slipping it under her skirts. She thought she was very clever, even though at first her heart pounded and hands trembled. As dawns turned, her visits became routine, and the guard looked forward to a pretty young maid cheering his day. Elizabeth added insurance by bringing the guard a sweet treat glazed with a coy smile. But as seasons passed, she became more aware of her desirability by the stares of young swains. So she stopped to treat, relying on flirting smiles to ensure safe passage. She enjoyed this power. Elizabeth, now 17, was tall, with slim female curves and natural movements, both soft and regal. Fair as pale honey, but not too much so. Highlighted eyes, of violet summer pansies, matching waist-long hair of burnished gold. Her look drew a fast male eye and clearly set her apart from her sisters. Their resentment and envy grew, but she learned to ignore their veiled comments and was quick to turn mean remarks in her favor. She walked sure, head held high, determined not to let them know her hurt inside. Mentally, however, they were no match and finally ceased their jealous effort. During those seasons, Elizabeth secretly read and reread most every book in the library. In fact, she even managed to sneak two of Simon's secret books hidden in an unlocked desk. At first disappointed to discover writings about why people acted in a certain manner, she decided to try some of the techniques on her sisters and young bachelors. Seeing the results, she now understood Simon's ability to manipulate others to maintain power and influence. She disliked him even more. Elizabeth kept her own counsel, but was observed closely by the queen. By this age, the ladies of the court were promised or became a courtesan, except Elizabeth. The young men of the court lacked the confidence to pursue her, and those that tried received polite rebuffs. Elizabeth could not fathom why her sisters would get so flustered and excited about male attention. She tried, but it just didn't work. She was beginning to believe her studies were a secret curse, and all suitors, both young and old, were uninteresting and boring. The queen watched with interest and wondered. A new spring bloomed, and the annual May Day celebration brought forth a beautiful morn. A moon's planning transformed the dreary winter garden into festive shades of the rainbow. Bright banners and flags hung about colorful, smelly booths packed with fruit and foods of every kind, mutton, pork, rabbit, venison, along with several types of fowl, including lark, covered one table. Piles of manchette, cheat, with plenty of bran, covered another. squeezed in between pyramids of apples, pears, peaches, and quinces, with imported oranges from Spain, her favorite, were stacked scary. Then, of course, herbs and spices were separate, but sat next to salads of chicory, marigold leaves, and asparagus. At the far end, dates, nuts, and seeds covered in sugar, plus gingerbread, her other favorite, were temptingly spread by colors. The chief steward also imported some rare chocolate to complement the beer, ale, and cider. The palace table was truly admired, and the king's steward puffed proud. The aromas mixed perfectly as she strolled, admiring. Wheels of cheese in all yellows surrounded white butter and clotted cream with lightly salted and sweet pies cuddled in perfect crusts. Finally, keels of bread and platters of tarts, eggs and honey-lathered confits watered every mouth. Nature's winter trash was swept or burnt away, leaving fresh smells of new life in the air. All types and shapes of people in clothing, hard and soft, mingled with screeching children hoping not to miss a thing. There was peace in the land, and news the king's crusaders were soon returning from their triumphant foreign war. The warm sun made Elizabeth feel especially fine. Everyone seemed the same as the celebration started, with troubadours strolling and strumming their lively tunes. The palace court mixed and mingled, laughed and joked about events and gossip. Women toyed and men preened while food and drink flowed. Enjoying the happy festivities, Elizabeth stepped back against the garden wall to catch her breath. She snuggled against the scarlet roses, savoring the fruity aroma, content to watch the celebration from a distance. She enjoyed observing people and smiled at the flirting mastery of the finely dressed women of the court. The young men, no, all the men, she decided, were oblivious to their wiles. Suddenly, a scream jerked her attention to the king's table. The queen was standing, bent over, leaning on the table with one hand and grasping her throat with the other. Her open mouth and bulging eyes told all that she was choking. Someone started patting her on the back as Elizabeth ran toward her, pushing others aside that were gawking helpless. Turning blue, the queen gasped for breath as Elizabeth shoved the man patting her away, ripped the buttons from her tight-necked collar, and jabbed the heel of her hand against her chest. The crowd gasped in shock. She struck the queen again, and a chunk of meat flew out of her mouth. Elizabeth heard her deep breath bring life back. Immediately, the queen's attendants moved in and escorted her inside away from the others. The palace guests, hushed for a moment, finally realized Elizabeth saved the queen's life. Then the chatter began, with everyone talking at once, praising her and reliving the event. Elizabeth nodded, quickly acknowledging their regard, and left to join the queen. Rushing with skirts high, she entered the room, finding a cluster of women hovering over the queen, all talking at once. With the ladies clumped together, the room was stifling with perfumes of every blend. "Good heavens," she said, raising her voice. "Pray, step away. Give the queen room to breathe." The startled women backed away, shocked at her impudence, daring to speak to them in such a manner. Ignoring them, Elizabeth sat on the edge of the lounge and lifted the queen's wrist to check her pulse. At the same time, she took note of the color of her skin and breathing, silently thanking Alio for teaching her some knowledge of the medical arts. The circle of women, angry at her boldness and familiarity with the queen, whispered their complaint. No matter, Elizabeth thought, the queen would be well. Next morn, rumors and gossip afresh. Elizabeth was summoned to the royal's rooms for a private audience. After graciously thanking her, the queen interviewed her for a time, and when she emerged, Elizabeth was appointed the queen's confidant and attendant. The palace court fairly roared with gossip, wonder, and complaint, and she was Irish, too. As summer drifted, Elizabeth's stature and reputation grew while she continued to dream of her books, adventures, and far-off places. although pleased with her position and busy with her charge and daily ministrations, she was lonely. One eventide, standing alone on her balcony, her mind wandered as a tickling breeze brushed against her hair and filmy gown. Feeling the velvet night hug her, she sighed, gazing dreamily at the spotted heavens circling the crescent moon, and whispered, "I wonder what my future will be."